Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. The debate over voting rights comes to a head in the Senate tonight, but the end game is uncertain. Senators are debating two combined bills, but Republicans vow to block a vote on final passage with the Senate filibuster that requires a 60-vote threshold for passage. And that's where we begin at the Reporters Roundtable tonight. Also, part of the discussion, COVID policies in the DMV, President Biden's administration 1 year later, and the Trump factor that just won't go away. My guests tonight, Ebony McMorris, White House correspondent for the American Urban Radio Network, and Misha Green, D.C. editor for the Afro-American newspapers. Lines are open. Want to hear what you think about these top stories? Give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Ebony, Misha, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right. So, Ebony, let me start with you. The debate is underway on Capitol Hill. Senators are talking about voting rights, but the reality is both sides are entrenched. What's going to come out of this? Is this purely a symbolic situation right now?
Well, it depends on who you ask. If you ask Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, he says the reason why he is doing this is because he wants the American people to see. He says they deserve to see their senators go on the record. And so by standing here and debating before the vote and going on with this, he wants people to be able to decide for themselves, hear from them. We're hearing some of the same arguments, though. So, you know, for some who decide not to tune in, I've been kind of watching it on and off all day. It's kind of the same argument. So I guess that's where some of the symbolism may come in part. But it's a matter of what options Democrats have. Without Manchin, without Sinema, and they're not the only ones, they're not going to really be able to go forward. So we've been asking, even in the briefing room, what is the strategy? And it seems like the strategy is they're taking it straight to the American people so that they can decide and hear, again, what Republicans have to say. It's a bit of a mess because we've been hearing since the president began to run, since President Biden ran, was on the campaign trail, that this was the most important issue. And many activists on the ground who I've been talking to constantly have been saying, why does it seem like we're waiting till the midnight hour to begin to press this, when we've been on the ground since you were running for office? And so if it's a priority, what can you do? And the president has said he will throw his full weight behind the bully pulpit, and he feels like he has not done this. So then the question, what will happen? Because they stand a huge chance to lose in the midterm.
Yeah. You know, Misha, one of the things that, you know, as Ebony has suggested, this may have been a priority for, you know, for the Biden administration, but the newest part of this is really the filibuster issue. Even, you know, first of all, there were considerations as to whether or not, you know, Joe Manchin may budge, and then now we've got this Kyrsten Sinema issue. And so now you have two, quote unquote, moderate Democrats who have really thrown a wrench into this situation. I mean, this seems to be dead on arrival.
Yeah, you know, first of all, I completely must say, as a Washingtonian paying taxes without representation and a native to the area, that this would not be an issue if the District of Columbia had voting rights in the Senate. I just start by saying that we won't get into a D.C. statehood conversation today.
Why not? Why not?
I'm a native too. Start it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Ebony is my sis, and I know she agrees with me, and I'm not stepping out of line and saying this today. But, you know, I think that Mayor Bowser eloquently said it yesterday at the Deliver Voting Rights Now rally slash press conference, which was more than 2 hours long yesterday. And it was, you know, featured a lot of really big heavy hitters. Nancy Pelosi was there. MLK III was there. Yolanda Renee King spoke. You know, all of these people who have been talking about the need to push the John Lewis Voting Rights Amendment Act for months, over a year now. I was I interviewed Al Sharpton about this in August of 2020. You know, they're at this juncture, they're talking about, as Ebony said, you know, now they're pushing for this in the midnight hour. And so this filibuster, while it seems like it's sort of been a wrench in the plan, we know that Republicans have something up their sleeve. They always do. And we knew that this was something that needed to be pushed in a major way. Activists had been doing so, as I just said, for over a year now. And so at this juncture, you know, as Ebony said, taking it to the American people is something that the Democrats are relying on, but they should have been pushing that, not just our activists who have been sort of sounding like a broken record to many, because now they see the risk that's there and the rights that are being taken away in states like Georgia and Texas and Iowa and Arizona and the states that are planning to do in these upcoming legislative sessions. I mean, it's a serious problem that they should have taken to the American people in a way that we could understand and be able to and to really digest what next steps should be, so that you don't have these people now saying, well, why isn't Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin supporting this? They could have been writing to these senators months ago.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. On deck, of course, tonight, the vote for the vote in the U.S. Senate. Also, we're talking about some of the COVID controversies. Also, the Biden administration 1 year in and the Trump factor that will not go away. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So here's my question for both of you, and I'll start with Ebony. Who is responsible for the potential failure of this voting rights issue? Is it the Biden administration, or is it perhaps the overshadowing of COVID, the pandemic that has been so prominent in the minds of not just Americans, but indeed the world?
So I think it's a combination of things. And I'm just going to first say, at the end of the day, and the president said it himself, he says the buck stops here, right? And so he is in office. You ultimately have to lay things at his feet. He is the one who came in very strong, talking about how he can rally up the Senate. Like, this is his ground, right? This is his ground. And I was talking with several strategists, political strategists, Republican and Democrat, and one thing that they said, Dems really have to begin to honestly fight like hell. And that could look like what Republicans do. Now, you can say it's fair, unfair. However, what is it that you need to do? One suggestion, because we were like, what things can begin to happen? Don't forget, when the infrastructure bill was put out, and you had Republicans, about 13 of them, that were about to vote for the voting on infrastructure, they threatened, their own party threatened their members to remove them from committees for going against the party, right? Those are some of the things. We really don't see that on the Democratic side trying to keep their people in line. And I'm not suggesting to do that. I'm just saying when their party is in trouble, they go hard in the paint, even against each other. We haven't even really seen the administration use the different agencies to go hard even on their own party. So, for instance, we know about Senator Manchin and his daughter who's in pharmaceuticals, and the stories that come out as far as the money that he's been making, and also the controversy behind the EpiPen or even the coal-based power plants. That's where he's gotten his money. Why not have the EPA lean in on him hard? I mean, we've always accused Republicans of going hard in the paint on their own people, but what about having the federal agencies lean in hard on Democrats and Republicans alike because this is an issue that we cannot, look, we've all said it before, you can't get to other issues until you come through the door of voting rights for our community. And for many of us, this is a life and death situation, so they have to begin to fight like hell. They need one or two more seats. Look, if we can flip a Wisconsin or Florida or Pennsylvania, we've got to begin to lean in. And if it's not going to happen on that floor, then what else can you do from that bully pulpit? I will say it's also a combination of what's happening with COVID and the economy and other issues. Although the administration has been touting some of the largest job numbers in American history, how recovery in job numbers in American history. But then for our communities, Harold, a lot of these stories take a different turn, because when you go deeper into the numbers, well, guess what? The numbers are still doubled for Black America. Mm. It's almost like we're having two different conversations at the same time. So if you fought like hell to get our vote, then you need to fight like hell to keep it.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're at the Reporters Roundtable. Richard, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Richard. What's on your mind?
I just want to say something that probably nobody's saying. Christian Sinema and Joe Manchin, they're two people that Martin Luther King talked about. I saw an interview recently where Martin Luther King said he was more worried about these white moderates than he was concerned about the Ku Klux Klan. Mm. He said that these white moderates was more concerned about order than they were about progression. Mm. Christian Sinema, Joe Manchin, they're white. They're white moderates. They're the exact people that Martin Luther King was concerned about. They don't give a darn about us.
Yeah.
Richard, they don't care at all about us.
That was in his letter to a Birmingham jail.
Yeah. Richard, thank you so much for your input. Your thoughts about that, Misha?
Well, Richard, I agree with you completely. I think that this is a situation of us being yet again awakened to the realities of racism that has been ever prevalent in this country and what this country was built on. And to Richard's point, in order to keep a semblance of white order and white power, you have to have voting rights taken away. And so, I mean, to take it to there, you know, with you, Richard, I think that it is completely a part of a systemic plan to keep order of suppressing the Black voice. I mean, taking away voting rights is a clear way of suppressing our power. And so in doing so, you're correct. These are the people that we have to worry about, not only Manchin and Sinema, but the other Republicans who are, you know, working to really have this filibuster versus having a vote. I mean, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's really shameful to know that so many of our representatives don't care to expand and empower and uplift and protect our voting rights for the American people. And as we know, African Americans are the foundation and fabric of this country and how we run and our culture. And so to not have our voice in the political system in many ways would be beneficial to those who don't want to see us succeeding.
And suffice it to say, you know, the voting rights is not just about Black people.
Right.
The voting rights issue is also about women. It's also about seniors. It's also about other people of color. It is also about members of the LGBTQ community. It really is about everyone. And I don't want us to to mistake that. Yeah, we see a lot of black people marching for voting rights. But the reality is that this voting rights package, both bills, this is about everyone. But as it has been suggested, that when everyone has an opportunity to vote, that we often see that the Republicans lose, which is arguably why they are against it. We're going to talk to Chase from Virginia on the other side, and we're also going to talk about some of the COVID controversies. Biden, 1 year in, and Donald Trump, yes, he's still around. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. My guests are Misha Green, D.C. editor for the Afro-American newspapers, also Ebony McMorris, White House correspondent for the American Urban Radio Network. If you have a comment or question about the topics that we are talking, the stories that we are discussing this week, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before we talk about some of the other topics, let me go to Chase, calling from Virginia. Chase, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, I appreciate the conversation. First-time caller here.
Thank you.
I was just curious. I forget the young lady's name, but she was saying that need to kind of go hard at some of these Democratic leaders who are maybe letting us down. My question comes, at what point do you say enough is enough? They've let us down over and over and over again, and they're not getting things done. Do we decide to start voting other people in or switching parties, leaving the party because they're not really doing anything for us? At what point do you say that enough is enough?
Ebony, I think he was talking about you. That was the hard in the paint comment.
Right, go hard in the paint. I know. Sorry. Yeah. look, I think you already seen that, right? I think we are already seeing that. You're seeing one of the questions that came from many organizers on the ground was, we're not going to be going back, knocking on, going door to door, pushing an agenda when we feel like you are not putting our agenda first. And we also have, many don't know, and I was just kind of reading over some numbers, that there has actually, even though the independent party is growing overwhelmingly, and then you also have other parties, smaller parties that we see popping up here and there. People are just upset, period. They feel like they're not being heard. They feel like they're not being understood. They feel like they're being used. And so I think this is a time, especially in this season, for those who are listening, if you are not politically active, that this is time for you to be politically active. This is time to put independent pressure on your elected leaders. Time to get up in the morning, make a part of your routine. After you get out the shower and get your day together, make some phone calls to lean in on your elected officials. And while you're leaning on those who are in office, be working behind the scenes to also see who can replace them, if that be you or if that be someone else. But I think that this season that we're in, many have become even more politically active. So it's not just about having a conversation, but it is about following through on actions and seeing what you can do. Many people say in the next few years, we're going to really see a more active third party. We'll see what happens. I'm actually not against with what you're saying. It's a lot to do that. There's a lot of money you have to throw behind that. But there are a lot of people who feel and think the exact way that you do. If enough is enough, where do we go from here?
Yeah. I want to move on to the other issue that has dominated the headlines, the newscasts now for 2 years, but it continues to evolve very, very much like the variants, of course, COVID. And one of the things that has cropped up this year, Glenn Youngkin, the new governor in the Commonwealth of Virginia, has really thrown a wrench into his COVID policies. And I want to start with this, because we're going to start with Yunkin, but here in the DMV, depending on where you live, will determine what the COVID policies are for your region.
Reaffirming the rights of parents in the upbringing, education, and care of their children. This executive order particularly addresses the rights of parents to, in fact, make a decision with regards to whether their children wear a mask in school.
So, Misha, that was his second executive order signed this weekend. He is saying no masks in the school systems, in the Virginia school systems. Yet, yesterday, when he spoke to the Virginia General Assembly in Richmond, he encouraged everyone to get vaccinated and boosted. That, to me, was just head-snapping. Get vaccinated, get boosted, but no mask in school. What?
Yeah, you know, I think what the executive order lays out is that parents may elect for their children to wear masks. So it's not necessarily that they no masks in schools directly, but that they have this choice. And this parental rights platform is really what won Glenn Yunkin the election. I had never even thought of parents' rights and parental rights being an issue. But as I followed it so closely and spoke even on your show about the Virginia elections, you know, it was so interesting to see that that was such a big hot button issue for those in the Commonwealth of Virginia and why they wanted to see Yunkin as their leader. But as you see, it gets messy when you're giving people such rights as whether or not to use something that protects their children and themselves. You know, it's so messy. What makes me feel good as a Washingtonian is that it looks like in Nova, in the true DMV, if you will, so that's Arlington County, Alexandria, Fairfax, Fauquier, Fredericksburg, Loudoun, Manassas, and Prince William, masks are still required by all staff, students in these counties. And so those are generally the people that we're interacting with on a daily basis. Those are the people who are still making their way to do work in D.C., and those are the people still going to Pentagon City that you're interacting with or when you're going out and doing your shopping, et cetera. However, you know, we know that those in Spotsylvania and Culpeper and those other locations that are giving or allowing for masks to be optional and giving people these options, there's going to be intermingling, and thus we're going to see numbers rising. I mean, how schools are handling the pandemic in general is a large contribution to numbers rising as we see now in the DMV, and that's in total. But it really is concerning and telling that Prince George's County, DCPS, Montgomery County, and the local districts are really, really enforcing the mask policy, and the nearby districts in the Commonwealth of Virginia have the option to allow students to come to school maskless and staff. That's really concerning.
Yeah, it sounds like a hit dog will holler in your background. But
two dogs saying mask up.
Yeah.
Mask up.
And to your point about Spotsylvania, I mean, I can just see, as you said, Yunkin's executive order is giving parents the option to say yes, their kids can or their kids cannot. So I can see in sixth grade class, Johnny says, my mom told me to wear a mask, but Susie says, my mom told me I didn't have to.
The situation is so divided, Harold, and the issue is that the division is between science and politics. Mm-hmm. And this has become way too politicized because most of the areas, and he is being, there are suits that have now come against him for that, but the areas that we are seeing that are going against that order mostly are in blue areas, right? Are in blue districts. So it's almost like areas that you see are heavily Democratic are saying, no, we're going to put on our masks, and you see the opposite in other areas. But we have to keep in mind that this is a public health crisis, one that we have not seen peak yet. And we've heard that from Dr. Murthy out of the administration, who has said that. We've got other variants coming through the door. The CDC, we're seeing, have changed the rules on when and how long we can isolate. And we have an increase of pediatric cases that have continued to increase exponentially. So why we keep throwing politics in this, it is why we have not been able to get out of the situation. One of the reasons why we haven't been able to get out of the situation that we're in. In addition to that, you have myths going back and forth, because one of the things that Youngkin did say was that, well, you know, one of the arguments is that kids aren't going to keep on their masks anyway. And the American Academy of Pediatrics literally came out with a list dispelling all the myths that we keep reporting. And one of the things that they found out, we've been thinking that it's the little ones, the K through 12 we've been having an issue with. Those are the ones that they found through some of their cases. They've been keeping their masks on. The issues they were having were some of the older kids, but in districts that they studied, they were still able to contain many of the cases. So that excuse that they're using, that kids won't keep it on, after looking at testing, that's not what, I mean, after they started looking at various cases and areas, that's not what they found indeed. I mean, dispelling the myth of the carbon dioxide and other toxins building up in the mask causing breathing problems. That's not what they're finding. But we have politicians that keep throwing these things out here, and because it may sound good, many people take it, or because we don't do research. I would just suggest when we hear things like that, go back and just do some research.
Yeah. One of the other issues, and there are a lot of things on the COVID front today, of course, the government came out with covidtests.gov, and it really is supposed to be online tomorrow, but already people have been able, even in its testing stage, to start ordering the rapid tests for home delivery. You know, that's a big deal. Let us hope that the site stays up, and that we don't have the same kind of a site crashing as we did with
the Affordable Care Act.
And so, you know, that's one thing. But back to the local issue, and this is what I was talking about when you talk about what's happening region to region. In Montgomery County, there was a public hearing about vaccine passports for businesses and restaurants and gyms and the like. And there was no support during the public comment from people who dialed into that. And I think that there's going to be a vote next week and another public hearing, but I just find it really interesting that depending on where you live, as I said, determines the attitudes about it. But COVID has no attitude.
Thank you. It has no attitude. It has no color, and that's not the problem that we're having.
And it gets very tricky in a location like the DMV, because we are so close. And just as COVID does not discriminate, as you all so eloquently said, we also see that people don't care, you know, just because there's all the vaccine people, and I'm not getting the vaccine. See, they're still trying to come to D.C. to do their things and have a good time. And so you see locations such as the district has now said, okay, in order to go out to restaurants and clubs, et cetera, you now need your vaccine in order to do these things and have a good time. But that's not going to stop the unvaccinated from going out in Maryland or Virginia and then sending their kids to school and passing the germs in those ways, especially in Virginia, where they don't even need to wear a mask, right?
Right.
And it gets very tricky and is really concerning. And I wish that there were a few more, local conversations among the DMV to really sort of handle this, but also a few more federal mandates to really make this work and happen to protect our people. I mean, it was awful. Today in Spotsylvania County, if you saw, they were supposed to have their big school board meeting, and people were storming out of the doors before I got on the call. I was watching one of the news, and people were storming out because the school board just suddenly decided to have a closed meeting in order to talk about the mask mandate. And the chair has already said he plans to give students the choice to wear masks. So it's a mess. There is no sort of rhyme or reason, it's seeming, regarding Youngkin's newest decision other than parental rights, which is going to cause, I think, a DMV wide surge.
Let's talk about politics front and center. Joe Biden, he's been in office now for almost a year, and we're just, 2 days away from the anniversary of the inauguration. Ebony, why are his approval numbers so low? Ebony, can you hear me? Let me go to Misha. Misha, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, I think there's a number of reasons why Biden's approval rates are so low. You know, for the most part of early January 2022, his approval ratings have been teetering around the low to middle 40th percentile range, where now we're looking at, I think, Quinnipiac University just put out a rating that it was as low as 33%. And they said that it was due to the economy, foreign policy, and Biden's response to the coronavirus that has his ratings as low as 33%. I think with the economy, the ratings were around 34%, foreign policy 35%, and coronavirus 39% of folks approved of Biden's stance and replies to the COVID-19 pandemic. And it is a place of people being frustrated because they're not seeing much of a dial, a forward movement. They're seeing a lot more transparency. They're seeing, things happening and vaccine rates rising, but people are still getting sick, and gas prices are rising at really high numbers, and I think people are noticing those things. And so while I sort of have a pulse from the people's point of view and what we call at the Afro the digital street, you know, by engaging with our people on social media and reading these chats and people's replies on blogs and that nature, people are frustrated. I'd love to hear Ebony's response as someone in the building at the White House, at these briefings, and sort of having a pulse on what some of the other reporters are asking on behalf of their readers and viewers.
Yeah, I have her back. Ebony, the question was, why are President Biden's numbers so low?
So that's a question. It's funny you said that. And much of, I heard my line dropped. I'm so sorry. This question was posed in their briefing room with Psaki. And what she said is some of the same things, that people don't feel it. Sometimes if you don't feel something, whether it's happening or not, you know, it's about your consumer confidence. And so what she went down the list, and I'll give another answer too. She talked about the, points of progress being the biggest year of job growth in U.S. history, American Rescue Plan. Now you have, from a year ago, 1% of people being fully vaccinated, now 74. Testing, there was none distributed a year ago, now 375 million per month. Schools open, now 95%. She didn't talk about inflation. They didn't talk about voting rights. They didn't talk about several other issues. And so what Mika's saying, in my day-to-day, how can I see what and feel what's going on? Because the headlines, and when I'm turning on the news, I'm seeing that
employers are looking for jobs, but guess what? I know plenty of people in my community who can't get one. And so it's a matter of what people, a matter of what people feel. Not to mention, I think Democrats have not been pushing hard enough what has been happening with the administration, what the president has been doing, the effect of the American Rescue Plan. So I think they, and many have said it, they have a problem with messaging and putting that out there at the same time. Because if I'm going home every day and I'm, you know, we've got this Omicron variant that looks like, I mean, a Pac-Man game. It doesn't matter which way you turn. It's just coming for you. In addition to that, people are having problems putting food on the table. There's supply chain issues. So it doesn't matter how much you talk the economic growth, what I'm seeing when I go to the grocery store, what I'm feeling when I go to the pump. And people aren't watching the briefing or watching other things. They're coming from the standpoint of how they feel on a day-to-day basis. Not to mention, in the midst of all of these problems that we're having socially, and we talk about racism and discrimination, it makes for the storm that we are in.
The last issue that I think that we should get to, and I think this is really critical, is this, and this is just a taste of it.
The Wall Street Journal described the practice race-based preferential COVID treatment. So that's what it is. You get it based on race.
Donald Trump in Arizona last week, and he is the gift that just keeps on giving. He does not go away. He remains a powerful force in the Republican Party, certainly promising a 2024 comeback. And that was just one untruth about race-based preferential treatment for the vaccine. But he went on to talk about the fact that he won, that continuing to push the big lie. And even with all of the consistent information that is coming out almost daily, he continues to be popular with his base. What am I missing, Misha? Are we just so polarized in this country that those who like him, who love him, are just going to ignore the obvious?
Yeah, I think it's truly the latter. I totally am also missing the appeal of Donald J. Trump. I just don't see what his followers see, and I don't get it. But there are those who are really pushing for a Trump 2024. I've seen at this juncture polls that 6 in 10 Americans don't want to see Trump run in 2024. But I feel like 6 in 10 is a little low for what a little high for what it should be. You know, the fact that so many Americans are still for a Trump 2024 is shocking, particularly after January 6th, which we know and can prove in so many ways is a direct correlation to the big lie and really overall presidency that was the Trump administration. And so I would think some of his biggest supporters would have taken a step back after seeing folks get arrested and die in honor of supporting the big lie and Donald Trump. But for whatever reason, there are those who are, in the words of Ebony McMorris, going hard in the paint for 2024. Just today, Giuliani, Sidney Powell, and other folks were subpoenaed for January 6th. You would think that his supporters would be chilling out, but they're going harder than ever to see their good man in office, especially after these Biden approval rates are so incredibly low. They want to see it, and I, like you, Harold, I don't see it.
And Ebony, do you have a sense, or is it too early, that the Biden administration is concerned about a Trump 2024 candidacy, or are they more focused on losing the House and the Senate?
Losing the House.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is about, so even when you were asking my colleague the question about why do people, right? It's about power. Trump, as much as we can say what we want about Trump, the sentiments that he shared, the words have been brewing in this country for centuries, brewing in this country. And when he came on the scene, he was able to articulate what his base had been feeling, but wasn't always bold enough. So he was the one that came forth and said how he said it, and put everybody on blast, even members of his own party, and got them to line up, even those who didn't say his name, but lined up with his policy. So for them, the big lie has become the big truth. And so it is gained. So you may have people who in their own district may not believe it, but guess what? If he gets behind me, or if he does this, and I still have a footing in my district or where I am, I'll do it. I'll line up. So give me my messaging points. Now, people were shocked and scared of what happened with the big insurrection that had been brewing before. But guess what? That some of the same members of Congress who came out and rebuked him, lying right back up with him, from McConnell on down, Kevin McCarthy on down. And so today, when Schumer was on the floor, he said, when he challenged Republicans and called them out, he said, this is the party of Donald Trump. Meanwhile, Biden's trying to paint him as a defeated president. Schumer came out and said that. This is the party of Donald Trump. And so many are lining up with that. They are emboldened. And then we are seeing them also take messages that we heard during the Civil Rights Movement and turn them around, which is why on that day we hear lines like going to the back of the line, right? And it is because they so badly, that is one movement they have never been able to trump. I hate to use that word. But instead, they borrow from that and use it for their own message and try to play the victim. And for many, they feel like we're winning.
And I think to your point, even in watching social media, in watching, Republicans talk about them being the party of Lincoln and the quote unquote party that, freed the slaves and all of that. And the reminder for those who give the pushback constantly that the Republicans of 2022, indeed the Republicans of 2020 and Republicans of 2016, are not those Republicans. This is right. Not the same party. It is not at all. And I think that it is important to understand that history and the history that is being written right now. And I suspect that seeing what we're seeing unfold right now, whether it's the Trump factor that will not go away, COVID, we are in for a very, very bumpy ride this fall and indeed in 2024. I tell you, Misha Green, Ebony McMorris, thank you both for sharing your thoughts. And I've got to figure out what position Ebony is playing when she goes hard in the paint.
Saying,
he's a power forward or what? I don't know.
Blow the kitchen sink at.
That.
No question.
Yeah, triple doubles for Ebony McMorris. Misha, you're going to have to catch up.
Yeah, that's my girl. We riding shotgun with me. Let's go, Mika. Look, ready.
Thank you both so much. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, January 18th, 2022. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.